Hi, I am Kelly, and today's date is Wednesday, February 16th, 2022. I am recording from Evans, Georgia, with Dr. Julie Keurig, who is my husband's movement disorder specialist, neurologist, and one who has become a great friend to us.
Thank you. My name is Julie, as Kelly was saying. I'm 44 years old. Today's date is Wednesday, February 16th, 2022, and I'm also recording from Evans, Georgia, with Kelly Spain. I would say is not only the spouse to one of my patients, but now a good friend as well. So I'm really excited to be here, and having this conversation has made me kind of reflect, and I wanted to look back. How long have we known each other now?
I think this has gone on maybe 4 or 5 years. We've been here, since 2016. So what is that, 5 years now, 6 years? One of
Yeah,
those.
something like that. Yeah, it's
Yes, yeah.
been at least 5 years, I would say.
All
And I
right. It's
feel
been like
like
a
in some
lifetime.
ways, exactly. I feel like it's been a lifetime. There's been so many changes and evolutions, and just also how your family has embraced me so wonderfully. I feel so kind of connected. So it kind of feels like I've known you forever.
That's true. That's true.
So thank you for agreeing to participate in this and be vulnerable and share your story again. And hopefully it'll be helpful for some others going through this down the line. I know that this
Yeah.
has
I'm
been
excited. I'm excited.
particularly tough. You're excited? Great. I'll just start very broadly and then just maybe rewind a little bit back to the beginning. But what would you say has been the most surprising part to you in this whole process?
Surprising. I think the most surprising is the changes, like you said. I mean, it literally has been a roller coaster from the beginning, even up until this point. No one can ever expect what each day may bring, because each day is different. From the first of him being diagnosed with Parkinson's, even up until this point right now, has been very different. And the changes that you go through is not just physical changes that you see Cedric going through, or someone with Parkinson's going through, but it's just, I mean, it is all involved. So mentally, physically, spiritually. And so that, I think that's the most surprising, because I'm still, we're still going through it. And of course, different changes between he, the patient, and then myself as the caregiver. So it's just ever changing. And I think that's the most surprising part, because you just think, okay, I'll just jump in and, help him and, make sure he's okay, make sure he gets to his appointments, make sure his meds are taken. But it's just so much more that's involved with that. So I think that, I mean, I know that covers a lot, but that's really what I have been grappling with, is just the changes that has just come along with this whole process.
What's been surprising is all the surprises along the way. Just keeps,
Yes. Ever changing.
ever changing. I mean, we were just in touch this past week. Just when you kind of think you've gotten into a groove and
Oh
things,
my
something
gosh.
new pops up. Tell me a little bit more, if you don't, about this past week, what it's been like.
So, he has been going through, when he goes to sleep, and his sleeping pattern has changed. Like we said, everything changed, but his sleeping pattern has changed. And so, where he used to not be able to stay awake, before, he fall asleep at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and sleeping throughout the whole night, is now has gone to like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. But when he goes to sleep, he's very active in his dream. His dreams are very, he told me actually this morning, he said, my dream that I just had was very, very vivid. And, mm-hmm. you know, he said, and so I don't know what to do. And I said, well, yeah, because I heard every bit of the dream. Right. He acts it out. I may be a little punching pillow at some point, so I got to move out the way.
Right.
Or it's just a full-blown conversation, or just the weirdness of the conversations that he has. And so that's what's kind of been keeping, I guess, both of us awake. And so mm-hmm. right now, sleep is not our friend. It's not been our friend.
It's not restful for us.
He would start out with, you know, some mumbling and groaning, mm-hmm. but I think the acting out of his dreams has really increased probably in the last month or two. That's kind of getting a little scary for me.
Has that spilled over at all into like wakefulness? Sometimes people will get confused. Are they dreaming it, or are they hallucinating it or seeing it? Has there been any of that kind of gray area?
I really want to say that it is a combination, because I would see him, you know, literally kind of reaching out. Maybe about 2 weeks ago, he woke up in a panic. He saw me, and I think he said probably the shadow of me, because, you know, he wasn't fully awake. And he literally got up out of his bed, ran, and, you know, fell over his nightstand. And so, you know, I had to kind of like scream, Cedric, you know, right. Are you okay? And when he finally came to, and he was like, why am I over here? And so I said, you don't remember anything? And he said, I just remember somebody running after me. And that's the last thing that I remember. But he literally ended up, you know, on his nightstand. Right. Because, I mean, he was literally running.
Right.
And it's things like that. You know, he'll grab in the air, or, you know, he'll swing his arm. I mean, it's crazy now. And so, you know, and as always, I don't go to sleep until I know he's fully asleep. And that may be 7 o'clock when it's, you know, time to get our daughter up for ready for school. So, yeah, it's just.
Meaning you don't go to sleep till 7 a.m. sometimes?
Sometimes, wow. Yeah.
Because he just hasn't fallen asleep fully.
Fully, right. And then, you know, if he does, I just want to make sure, you know, he's not running in his sleep and I'm still asleep, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, it's gotten a little bad.
Have you had to sleep in separate bedrooms or areas because of safety fears?
So I'm afraid of that, because I think we're joined in the hip, you know that.
Yeah.
So no. I think if I move to another room, I think he'll probably lose it. But I have thought about that. You know, our bedroom is available right next door. Mm-hmm. And I have thought about that. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. But just what that would look like, I'm not sure. So it hasn't happened, but the thought has crossed my mind.
And you brought up so many things I want to make sure not to forget to talk about. I know you're up at night sometimes for different reasons. I know you have a side business where you're trying to, you know, do what you can, however mm-hmm. you can, to support your family in this situation. We can talk a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. And B, you have a bedroom available because one of your sons are not living with you because of this situation. And we mm-hmm. can talk about that as well. And how, you know, from the beginning, this has really kind of upended, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of rearranged how maybe you expected you'd be living.
Right.
You mentioned, I wanted to make sure not to forget to circle back. You mentioned the changes, not only physical, because a lot of people are familiar with the physical changes, be it the tremor or the dyskinesia, as you think Michael J. Fox, or some of the slowness. But you mentioned the mental challenges and the spiritual challenges. Mm-hmm. And I know you're both spiritual people too. And those are kind of more the invisible things that people don't necessarily know about or understand. So I was hoping you could just talk to us some more about that. And tell me, you know, what are some of the spiritual issues that you've run into or Cedric has?
So I guess just need to bring up a little back history. So Cedric and I have been married, I guess, for the last 20 years. Last year, we celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Wow. Sorry to interrupt. I just want to take a moment. I hear I think it's an email notification one of you may be getting in the background. Is it you, Kelly, by any chance? Or?
Here.
Or Julie, do you see something?
I don't see emails. I hear what you're talking about.
Let me see anything.
If I can see do not disturb.
Now I'm gonna pause the recording real quick.
Yeah.
Yes, Cedric and I have been celebrating our 20th anniversary on last year, and so he was diagnosed at the age of 39. And so we've been on this journey for, a long time. And like I said, it feels like a lifetime. And so when he first, you know, got diagnosed, it was very unfamiliar. We had no idea, you know, what was Parkinson's, because there was no family history. There was no family, you know, any of that. He's not a vet. He's not, you know, he never worked in a farm, you know, that kind of thing. All the things that you kind of know from the top of your head of some of the effects from, implications of how he may have gotten or however that works, you know better than I. But it was nothing that came from that. And so you jump in automatically and you think, okay, yes, Parkinson's, let's figure out what this is. Yes, that means our faith is just going to, you know, go in overdrive because this is something unknown. And so, you know, we told our family, of course, and our family are big prayer warriors. And, you know, we got a lot of people. We both were raised in the church. And so we had a lot of people at church, friends that were, you know, praying and, you know, what is this? How do we get through this? And so once we started the journey and was kind of, you know, guided through what this may look like for us, you know, our faith never wavered in the beginning. I'll say for me, our faith never wavered. But as the journey came along, like I said, with all the changes that came along, there's a point where you don't lose faith, but it's like, okay, can we talk about something else? Or, you know, can there be something else we focus on? Because this has been our life for the last, you know, 6-7 years. For me, and I can only talk about for me, it has wavered a little bit, and just not knowing what the next day will bring, or because of the, I guess, the sacrifices that we've both made while being on this journey, you do get to a point, and I have gotten to a point, and I think I'm still there to an extent. Okay, Lord, what's next? Can we get to a place where we at least were, because we're not there anymore. I'm struggling with a lot of things spiritually, mentally, that I believe because of the journey that we've been on, because it's just mm-hmm. kind of been stagnant for us, because that's all we've known. You know, Parkinson's has become our life.
Yeah.
And nothing else, there was no room for anything else, I'll say that. And so because of that, I think for me, I've become very stagnant. And again, not losing faith in God, but just kind of just being stuck. And that means for me, if I'm stuck, there's no growth going. I'm not growing. Mm-hmm. And I was growing every day in my career. I was growing as a person. I was growing as a wife. I was growing as a mom, as a friend, as a sister. And I can truly say probably within the last 6 months to a year, I've just been stuck. And that means no growth. And so no growth, you know, little dead pieces start dropping off. And so I think that's where I am. And I think, you know, that's where caregivers may find themselves. I'm in a lot of Facebook groups for caregivers for Parkinson's, or just caregivers, period. And I see a lot of the commonalities of just being stuck and just being, you know, now what? You know, my life ended. My life has ended. I think I may be probably the, you know, some of the younger, on the younger end of it as far as age wise. And that makes it even more that makes it even more challenging for me, because it's not like I'm retired, or I had to retire, or I have retired. You know, I still see myself as being young at 45, and I just don't see anything further down the road. And so, and that's been hard for me. That's been very hard for me.
Right. I know your story somewhat. I feel like every time we talk, I learn something new about your story and what's going on. But I think it would be helpful for other people to hear about it, starting from, I think, the point where Cedric was working at the school, elementary school, I think, as as hired as a coach. Is that correct?
Actually, IT. He was an IT person.
IT. So
he
was over. Okay. I always think of him as sports.
Yes. He will always be a coach, because that's what he always knows. So, yes, that's
right.
True.
But, yeah, he was working in IT. And, you know, all of this kind of just really flabbergasted me. And I just think I've been kind of really taken by your story going through these steps. And I think that's why it feels like I also know you forever, because it's been so much. And like you said, being young, it's different when you're retired and you've done your job and it's behind you. But when you're so young and in your prime, what feels like should be your prime, and this has literally affected everything. So tell us, like, from when he was in IT, like, he was hired for this new job, and he was there, what, like 3 weeks or something like that?
He was there literally for 3 months. He was there for 3 months. We had moved a year before, me and my middle child, and our daughter, and we had moved here to Evans in 2016, and it was just us. And so Cedric and my oldest stayed back where we moved from, Gainesville, Georgia, so my son can finish his eighth grade year in school. And so our middle child, he was just starting middle school, and our daughter was just starting elementary. And so we wanted to make sure that they started, you know, at a new school, you know, in the whatever the first grade was. And and I moved best based on a job that brought me here. And so you know, I was here as a regional campus director over one of a big university. And so I did
that. That's a big job.
That was a big job, and I loved it. Oh my God, I loved it. And I'm a servant. I have a servant heart anyway. So I love just helping people, and in that position gave me so much reward, you know. And that's when I say I'm stuck, because, you know, that was what I did. That is what I love to do. And all my, you know, past jobs was just helping people in whatever capacity I could. And I did. But yeah, it was a big job, but it was a great job, very rewarding. and so once my son finished eighth grade, then they moved here the following year. So I guess in 2017. And I may have my years wrong, but anyway, when they moved, he started working for the school system here, and he was an IT, in IT. So he worked on computers, and he's been a computer geek as long as I've known. So he's been in the cell phone, wireless, you know, computers, all of that. He's been in all that for quite some time. And so he was able to get an IT job in the school system here. And so, a full year after his diagnosis, he did not have any symptoms for Parkinson's, none. He didn't have, it was just, he was good. None of the symptoms showed. But it wasn't until, you know, literally a year later, and he started working and he was getting good in his job and he loved what he did. The symptoms started to progress, rather quickly. And we just didn't know. And he still wanted to push through, you know, oh, Kelly, I can do this. And I was like, okay, fine. And I think, you know, we was getting direction from you, you know, saying, okay, this is what you need to do. You got him set up on, you know, some meds. We had a medicine routine, and, you know, he was good. And there was just, you know, I think the thing that caused the issue or the him leaving his job was that we had to change his medicine. And because he was still kind of, you know, getting used to the meds and the routine, if he changed any meds, he kind of relapsed, or it took him a while to get his body to get adjusted to the new routine. Right. And so he missed quite a few days at work. He always kept them up to date. He always, you know, let them know what's going on. And they appeared to be, you know, working with them and all that. And it was not until, and look, I try to erase that part out of my brain.
I know. It's a hard one. That's why I'm.
He really needed some time away, and they just said, you know, no, we can't do this, you know, again. And because he had only been there for 3 months, you know, he didn't have any time preserved, or he didn't have any time that he could use for sick leave. And it was a ring around and run around. And at the end, you know, literally, he found out that he quit his job through a letter they sent to him through the mail. And that was it. And I remember, you know, one of the supervisors saying, hey, you know, I want to talk about, you know, what happened, you know, just to make sure there's no hard feelings. And I remember that conversation, you know, vividly. And I remember going in there and, you know, and the thing that the gentleman was saying was, you know, we just didn't know. And, you know, me and Cedric looked at each other and said, what do you mean? You know, we've given you several letters from his doctor that states what's going on with him. We've given you, you know, doctor's excuse for, you know, what's going on. And he just needed a little bit of time to kind of get readjusted to, you know, his meds. And once they kick in, you know, he will be fine. And they said, well, yeah, but, you know, it didn't come to us until late. And it was just, I guess, just the way that it happened and it transpired. And that in and of itself opened our eyes to how people look at, you know, the medically challenged people. And there were several instances where, you know, we had the parking ticket and, you know, we were sitting handicapped, or, you know, we were parking handicapped and Cedric, he'll walk out great, but, you know, at a moment's notice, especially in the beginning, you know, he would freeze up. He would need, you know, the boys and, you know, us to help him. And we used to get, you know, cussed at, we used to get, I mean, nasty looks. And that started the, I guess, the emotional journey for us because that really opened our eyes to how people see people who may be sick. You know, they may not look it physically, but, you know, again, just by looking at them, you can't tell that, you know, there's a lot that's going on within a person. And, you know, through, you know, him losing his job and, you know, just circumstances that way, I think that started all of this, you know, really eye-opening process that, yeah, we're not the typical age of, you know, Parkinson and, you know, Parkinson family, but, you know, he has it, you know, it affects him just like a 70, 60, 70 year old, you know, when he freezes and he couldn't move or walk, he looked just like a 60 or 70 year old who had Parkinson's as well. And so, oh gosh, look, I can go on and on and on about all of that, but that's a part of it. That's all that is a part of, you know, you never know what to expect. You know, when it deals with living with a disease and also caregiving for someone living with a disease.
Right. And as you're saying, being so young, he can look and act like a 70 year old, but the system and supports that are in place are for the more typical patient who's in their 60s, 70s, 80s and retired. You know, here he is in his late 30s, early 40s, and there weren't these supports in place for you. So not only are there not supports, but there's not a lot of grace. You know, people are seen as a burden. Right. He was like, let go. And how did that in turn affect what was happening at home?
I think that was the start of the, you know, of the challenges that you hear from the younger people who get sick, because I know that people, you know, there's younger people who, you know, get cancer, who develop these autoimmune diseases, and, you know, literally it's the same thing. And what you would think would be provided for, you know, the older gentlemen or the older people who would have these instances, there's nothing out there for the younger one. And so that is what the issue was for us when Cedric was first diagnosed. I had to literally.
What's up?
Okay, Francesca.
I'm here. I'll pause the recording.
So just to pick up where I left off, like I said, there's the resources are very limited for younger patients and their families who are going through disability. And so the process of getting this disability through, you know, Social Security was very challenging. You hear all these horror stories where, you know, it's going to take a lawyer pretty much to help. And I will say that process was very easy. And again, thanks to your guidance, letters, I think all were very helpful the caseworker who was with us and kind of helping us, got us through, that process was very easy. So, you know, a person with disability has those resources. It's just the caregiver for that person does not have resources, especially if you're younger than a retirement age. And so that is where the challenge came for us, or for myself, I guess, because I did have to end up leaving my career, my job, because Cedric did get to a point where he was not able to, I was his hands, I was his feet, I was his everything, because again, just trying to get adjusted to meds, the disease was progressing, and so I there was no other way. I couldn't put him in a home. I wasn't gonna do that, you know. So the only choice was, and I had to become his full-time caregiver, and so that's what I did. And again, you jump into that groove of, you know, I got to take care of everything. And so there was just no resources for me, as far as when I left my job, I left insurance, I left you know, medical insurance, I left, you know, all of that on the table. And when I tried to reach out to look for resources out there, there just was none. And so that became a challenge, and that hindered a lot of things. And I think that was a part of the spiritual and the mental decline for me. You know, still, like I said, you know, still what I'm facing at this point, because of just being stuck. The person who I was working, I'm not that person anymore. And so just trying to find a place of who I am outside of a caregiver for Cedric, or for a caregiver for someone who has Parkinson's. I'm
struggling with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Big struggle.
So, you have no health insurance right now? Is that correct?
I have no health insurance.
And what about your kids?
My kids do.
Okay.
You know, for those, like I said, they will take care of the disabled. They will take care of the dependents of a disabled child. But a spouse of a disabled, there's nothing out there. And so, so my kids are good. I made sure my husband was good, and I made sure my children was good. And in the midst of me trying to make sure I'm good, there's just nothing out there. So, and in that of itself comes challenges as well.
Of course, because,
you know, you taking care of others. What do they say when you're on the plane? You make sure, you know, you take care of yourself before trying to help somebody else. And I just have not been able to do that. I have not been able to take care of myself, because I haven't been able to take care of myself.
Right. You know, you've sacrificed a lot. And, you know, they call the care partner now more and more the invisible patient, right? Because Parkinson's doesn't just affect the patient, but especially when you're so young, it affects you as a team, as a family, your partnership, your everything.
Right.
I mean, if there's one change you could make in our system, like, what do you wish would be in place to help you?
I really wish the same resources that's provided for the disabled, for those, you know, Parkinson's, MS, you know, any of those debilitating, you know, non-curable diseases that are out there, for those care partners, there has to be something that is right along with it, that package.
Right.
Now, I remember, you know, student loans. He was able to, you know, have his student loans forgiven because he's disabled. Well, what about the caretaker?
Who can't work because you have to take care of him.
Can I get mine? You know,
right.
kind of thing. So, you know, but it's so much, you know, so many examples, just like the student loan issue, that's just like that. Why can't I have insurance? Mm-hmm. I'm taking care of somebody who is disabled and he can have insurance, you know, he or she can have insurance. And so that is the biggest thing that should be in place. The resources for those, you know, disabled care partners, anything care partner related. I mean, you only find like a handful. I know there's some stuff on Michael J. Fox Foundation, and I know, you know, local groups have it, but if you can, you know, if there's something that's for
a system-wide,
yes, kind of
policy in place, yes, yeah,
something that can be for care partners as well, that's definitely needed. I mean, there's just no getting around that. Again, I get it. I get, because the norm is, you know, those who are older and retired, and so they have right. They have their retirement. They have their
pension
insurance.
Or Social Security, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're good. But right. if, you know, for younger patients, there's nothing. There's nothing. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully when people listen to this, maybe in 2050,
right.
it'll be an issue of the past.
Right. It's always when you're not here, right?
You know, I always think of that story. I just know when you came in one day and you no longer had your long hair, right? And I said, what happened? And you told me, I have no time to take care of my hair. And just tell me what was going through your mind when you cut off your hair.
I don't have time for me. As simple as that. I don't have time for me. There's a lot of challenges that care partners will go through, that they will find themselves dealing with, that mm-hmm. Nobody will ever understand. Not even, you know, the people that we're taking care of, because they have their own challenges. So, you know, I don't want to be a burden, you know, I don't want to be, you know, da da da. But, you know, even in the midst of that heartfelt, and I truly, because, you know, Cedric says it all the time, I don't want to be a burden. And I believe him. I do. I really do.
Yeah.
But he will never understand.
Can't.
My day-to-day challenges, and I would never understand his, and I won't. You know, being married 20 years, you know, being married period just has its challenges, but being married
right.
with, you know, someone who is disabled and, you know, just going through a lot of challenges and of an incurable disease, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure. It changes the dynamic. Like you're saying, you've been married for 20 years and you go into marriage as a partnership, right? Mm-hmm. And I know, especially before the DBS, you know, you become more like not just partner, but like caregiver and, you know, patient, and that changes things. And I know when he was in high doses of medication, there was this like, also like this childlike behavior and changes in his personality and thinking. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about like when he was taking his afternoon dose, like what happened.
There was a point where, and it was like clockwork. Every time he took his 1 and his 3 o'clock medicine, the person that I married was no longer there. He would literally go into a whole dimension. But he would literally go into a different person. And I don't even know if we ever pinpointed what that was, what symptom was. I don't know. I don't know if we ever came to a conclusion of what that was or not, but he literally became childlike. And I think the only way I could describe it to you was if people know the movie Rain Man, where Robert De Niro's character goes into, you know, where he talks to himself and he's just kind of looking up in the sky and just kind of dazing and, you know, and just the words that comes out of his mouth was just very unclear. And we have children and, you know, our children saw that in them and they were taken aback at the beginning because, you know, our two boys who are our oldest, we have two boys and a daughter and, you know, the two boys who only knew him as, like you mentioned before, a coach, because he coached, you know, peewee basketball and YMCA and rec league and, and, you know, that's all they knew was this coach and this energetic dad and, you know, all over the place and hyper. And so to see them and see him in a childlike manner of behavior, they just, you know, didn't know how to deal with that. And so, you know, children have their own struggles that they deal with, this, with, you know, with a parent that, you know, has a disease as well. And that could be a whole nother interview as well. But you know, when he would go into this state, it was just bizarre to me. And like I said, it was clockwork. So, you know, it would last maybe an hour or two and then he'll be fine. He'll come out of it. And then, you know, probably the next two doses after that, he will go right back into it. And so, you know, you think about when you marry somebody and, you know, standing in front of them and, you know, of course, everybody says, you know, says the vows, you know, sickness and health, you know, those vows and, you know, everybody just kind of just brush it off. Yeah, it'll be fine, nobody. But when you actually go through it, oh my gosh, it is like, and then you see this. It definitely created some challenges because you then turn or get to the point where you're no longer a wife.
Right.
You're just a caretaker. And so you see him differently or you see your, you know, your partner very differently. And that became a challenge. That also affected you know, me spiritually, me mentally. And so because now how can you decipher between a caretaker and your husband or wife, whatever the situation is? And so, and again, that's what I'm finding. I'm reading in a lot of these, you know, caretaker groups that I'm in that, there's a distinctness between who you married and then who that person is because the things that you've had to do for your husband or your care partner. And so that is a challenge that I don't think is talked about a lot when you talk about your care partners or, you know, taking care of your loved ones during sickness. And so that changes your whole dynamic in your marriage, in your home, with your children. Like I said, oh God, that could be a whole different conversation. But you know, when you see them not be the same person you knew, or who you fell in love with, or who you got to know, you know, who you became friends with, it changes a lot. It changes
a lot. Yeah, and that, you know, really touches on a lot of those, we're seeing those non-motor symptoms that we see, that, you know, executive dysfunction, not able to multitask and plan and organize. Like, you had to do all of that. And, you know, the thinking and the memory, those are affected, and that in turn affects personality and responsibility levels? And what about like when he was had those like childlike episodes, did he ever like see things?
I think the hallucinations were kind of like a hit and miss. The delusions were kind of a hit and miss. Because I don't think I've seen somebody, real life, go through it. I can only assume that there were kind of touches of it. But you know, it wasn't like I see a green pig or, you know, anything like that, but it was, you know, different things of he's talking, but he's mumbling and he's having a conversation, but it's not with me. And, right. And you know, again, as Parkinson's, it is degenerative brain disease. So, you know, he's losing functions in his brain all the time. So that part I got, I just couldn't decipher whether it was hallucination or what it was, but it was just so weird. Weird, scary, you know, all of that at the same time. So I always say it may have been hit and miss. It may have been a touch of hallucination, you know, delusions, all of that rolled up to one. Because, you know, as you've made us fully aware, everybody goes through it differently. So mm-hmm. many of your Parkinson patients definitely have different ways that they, you know, and I know that you've heard a lot of stories from that. So, mm-hmm. So it's very different of how they kind of function through all that. But you know, it's definitely there, because you know, just thinking about your brain, you know, losing functions and, you know, different things, and so all of that comes into play as far as, you know, who that person is turning into.
Right. And that's a good point, that everyone's story is so different, and their symptoms and how they evolve. And especially young people tend to have a little bit of a different symptom profile. And some people will see somebody outside their home, and some people will be having conversations with unclear who mm-hmm. around them. Mm-hmm. So to know one Parkinson's patient is to know one. Mm-hmm. So this kind of spectrum of behaviors is really quite broad.
Yeah. Dr. Keurig, we could probably go on and on and on, because I want the world to know how great you are. Okay. again, you just don't meet, you know, specialists who just take such an interest, who understand the field. Who learns, who make it a point to learn the field every day, and what you have done as far as helping us through this whole Parkinson journey. You know, I've got to say it, and I know I've said it so many times to you, that you have absolutely been an angel to us, because I don't know where we would have been if, you know, our first experience with a neurologist was not the best experience for us. And so that kind of turned us off with that journey. And so I just assumed, okay, this is going to be what we're going to go through, until we moved here to Augusta and met you. And, you know, so your guidance through Parkinson's, which is very difficult, has been very, very major in our life. And so I hate that more questions weren't asked of you as we went through. But, you know, again, having a good specialist who understands the ins and outs of Parkinson's is very, very detrimental to a family, to a patient, to the patient's family. And so you best to believe that my family has loved you and embraced you because you have been a great, 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 great help for us last 6 years.
Well, you know, knowing you guys is to love you. It's been a pleasure knowing you. And what I learned, and I learned from you, you know, constantly, because everyone's story is different. And just like you said, guidance is important. I hope if someone's a caregiver and they're listening to you, that they feel less alone, aware of more resources. And I know just like it's in your heart to help people. It's always been. And your story is not over. I don't want to be staying. So you're going to be helping so many people. I really do. I think there's a lot of space and need for changing how we approach and how we support caregivers as well. I think there's more education, more knowledge about Parkinson's. And my hope is that that will change, that it'll be easier for others in your position. And I'm sure you'll be playing a role in that.
I hope so. I do. Yeah. I do. If that is the change, look, if that's the change I want to see, I definitely want to definitely be a part of that, because there's a lot that needs to be done. A lot needs to be done. You know, there's everything out there for the patient themselves, but nothing out there for those who have to step up. And
it takes a village, right?
It does.
So we got to take care of our village.
Right. Look, and I definitely would love to be one to help, you know, others to be able to help take care of their village as well. I think that would help me. I think that will help.
Yes. Yeah. I think just being here today and having, you know, and taking the time to share your story. So thank you.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And I know that we will definitely continue our conversation, but I'm so grateful for this opportunity. So grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you.